Welcome to Not Over It. I'm Becky Kirsch, Managing Editor at Pop Sugar.
And I'm Zareen Siddiqui, the Director of Audience Development at Pop Sugar.
Zareen, what's your Not Over It for the week?
I am not over the fact that for some odd reason, Nick Jonas and Priyanka Chopra Jonas were the chosen ones to talk to tell us the Oscar nominations this year.
I mean, clearly, what do you mean you're confused about Nick Jonas just has given us so many Oscar-worthy performances, such movies as Camp Rock.
My God. It was also, he wasn't at the Grammys. Isn't he a musician? It's just all very, very confusing. And
I did really like Nick Jonas on Scream Queens.
I didn't watch that show.
Don't go back and watch it now.
That was my not over it of the week. Although, shout out to our sister brand, cousin brand, sibling brand, or sister. I guess sibling.
Now this
was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Short Film for the short film Two Distant Strangers. So that's cool. Becky, what was your not over it?
Okay, now we're something completely different. My not over it is this roller coaster of I don't know what that happened to Pete Davidson last week. It started with a press release that said that Pete Davidson was launching a production company called Bodega Cats LLC. And you're like, okay, Pete Davidson's launching a production company. I can see that. But within the press release, it said he was launching it with his wife, who
was a childhood
friend of his, but it acknowledged that the news of his wife had not been released to the world yet. Like, it was self-referential in that the press release said, you know, the cat's out of the bag on our production company and our marriage. And this was released on, you know, PR Newswire outlets were picking it up. The best part of the press release for me was that they said they had to come forward with all of this in time for St. Patrick's Day, because the production company is very focused on diversity and representation and inclusivity, and specifically, and I quote, since Pete is Irish and our platform is about diversity and belonging and entertainment, we're going to do something special for St. Patrick's Day on our social media. God. We're going to highlight the holiday's history and bring awareness to how the Irish have been prosecuted in media and the cultural appropriation their community continues to face around this holiday today. Now, listen, I'm half Irish, so no disrespect to the Irish community. I don't personally feel like that we're the number one community that's being persecuted right now, especially not last week. Pete Davidson's fake wife, whose name is Michelle Mootready, her entire week really went downhill from there, because immediately this was debunked by Pete's legal team, who's like, no, Pete Davidson's not married. No, Pete Davidson's not launching a production company. Pete Davidson has no idea who this woman is, even though she was insinuating on her Instagram that she was also pregnant with Pete Davidson's baby had an entire Instagram account for Bodega Cats LLC and an entire website. And it only continued to devolve from there. And ultimately, she was arrested a few days later for trespassing at his house. So this woman is a full-blown stalker who was ultimately arrested. And I think I'm not over one. The dedication on her part, also the prowess, the fact that she was able to convince anyone that this was real with a real fake press release. I mean, then there's a lot to explore here, because
to get inside of his house and she's like casually having a cup of coffee or something, and his cousin was like,
It is clear that she definitely is not all there and deeply obsessed with
what makes you say that?
Pete Davidson. I mean, all of this scamming really lends nicely to
I see what you did there, Becky.
Today's podcast.
Yes.
So today we have a very special guest joining us, Maggie Panos, who is a senior editor at Pop Sugar and also a pop culture expert. Welcome, Maggie, to our podcast.
Thank you, Becky. It's nice to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your role at Pop Sugar?
Sure. Well, I have been at Pop Sugar for actually 9 years. This is my anniversary month, Pop Sugarversary, as we say at Pop Sugar.
Happy anniversary.
Oh my goodness. Nine years. Nine years, the same place in media. Whoa.
I would say, so my tenure falls somewhere between Becky and Zareen. Becky, you're at what, 15?
75.
A woman never tells.
75.
It's been 84 years since Becky joined Pop Sugar. And so I started in the New York office, then I went to San Francisco, and I'm now in Portland. This whole time I've been basically on the entertainment and celebrity team. The only difference is I started on that team, and now I am the manager of our freelance program for that team, Pop Sugar Voices. Shout out to the Voices team. But over my time at Pop Sugar, I've interviewed many a celebrity.
Maybe we should get into it.
Yes, let's. The theme of today's podcast, as Becky hinted towards, we are going to dive into the world of crime documentaries, specifically cons and scams. I think, yeah, so as Becky sort of just hinted, what we're going to be covering on today's show is crime, specifically cons and scammers, which is our favorite kind of crime. I think
she said with such delight.
I know. Well, because it's as Becky likes to, was it you that called it a victimless crime?
No, go. But it is. Well, it's, I mean, it's not on a victimless
crime. Yeah, it's not a victimless crime, but it's less serious than sort of what we kicked off this entire journey with a couple of years ago. Like, I think as a society, we've been obsessed with crime for a while, and I think at least it kicked off in 2014 when we had the podcast Serial that I think everyone was collectively listening to and like obsessed with what was happening with Adnan Syed and just that entire thing. And then it sort of divulged into The Jinx, which was the first crime documentary that I felt every single person I knew was watching and talking about how like just crazy Robert Durst is.
I would say that's still my favorite like crime documentary of all time.
It was, yeah, it was done so well.
We were all just, I know, towards it.
So hooked. But I think those were sort of the things that kicked off you know, like The Jinx and Making of a Murder, and
Making
then
a Murderer.
Making a Murderer. Thank you, Becky.
There probably is a Making of a Murder. There's a How to Get Away with Murder. I just want to make sure everyone's aware of which murders we're talking about.
Yeah,
I think Making a Murderer was huge in that it was really Netflix's first
right.
big streaming hit that everyone was watching.
About murder, about their murder. First big streaming hit.
Yes, about murder. But even people who you wouldn't necessarily think were like true crime fans or
right.
docuseries fans were like, oh my God, have you seen this?
Yeah. So I think we sort of started out with this obsession of murder documentaries and shows, which we are still very much obsessed with. I personally watch Dateline like every other day, which is a classic.
So my mom. Here in
SNL
company.
Did a skit about this like just a couple weeks
ago. I know.
Ago.
And I felt so seen. I felt so seen watching that skit. It was good. Now that song is great. I'd make it my ringtone if that was still a
Why
thing.
Why don't you sing it?
Murder show, murder show.
I'm gonna watch a murder show, murder show. I'm gonna watch a murder show. Netflix, Showtime, HBO, and Dateline. Murder show, murder show. I'm gonna watch a murder show. YouTube.
That's how I feel about the weed gummy sketch, but Becky already knows that.
Yeah, so I feel like we kind of like kick things off with this obsession with murder crimes, and then it sort of has morphed into something else, which maybe we as a society got, we're like, this is too much, it's too dark, we need this, but we need a diet version of it.
Well, I think it's just like there's an appetite for more at all times, and this is sort of like the little sister of the true crime murder podcasts, or the true crime con and scam and fraud,
right. And so the diet version going from murder was go to scams and cons, which we're now obsessed with as a society, which is sort of like the new, not the new thing, but I feel as if people are maybe consuming scam documentaries more now versus darker murder doc. I think the pandemic has just tired us out. Maybe we just need something dark, but we don't want anyone to die at the end of it is what
well,
we want.
Well, that's what I was going to say is like, there's a lot of heavy stuff going on in the world right now. And I can speak for myself in that like, I don't want to watch the news and see all this stuff happening and then go watch someone get murdered on my own time and figure out who did it. Like, it's just not really appealing to me as much anymore.
Right. It's more fun to be like, oh, this person went to jail for this. This is good. Like, this is probably what should have happened.
Right.
It feels
well. I'm
less dark.
For me also, who for one reason or another, I don't even know if it's like, oh, this is too dark for me for the murder true crime stuff. I mean, for Making of a Murder, I just got kind of bored. I was like, I don't need to see 9 hours of like whatever happened to this man and where he is. But not only, like you said, does usually the person get caught at the end, so there's like that vindication of like this guy or woman, as it may be, like went to jail or got what they deserved. It's the fascination with their ability to trick so many people, depending on, you know, what it was, whether it's, I mean, like, we'll get into, you know, some of the greats.
Yeah. Why don't we take a quick break? And then when we come back, we'll dive into some of these most recent scam docs that we can't get enough of.
So one of the more recent offerings in the scam documentary category is Operation Varsity Blues, which is Netflix's take on the college admissions scandal.
The star of that show was Olivia Jade.
Not the star of the documentary, the star of the actual scandal.
Yeah, the actual scandal. And Felicity Huffman.
Yes, Full House's Lori Loughlin played a role.
Aunt Becky.
Yes.
She'll always be Aunt Becky to me. I watched Operation Varsity Blues. It was okay. It actually took me a few like sit downs to like finish watching the whole documentary. I thought that the calls recreated from the FBI wiretaps were interesting, but overall, it didn't grab me.
I watched it too, and I also agree that it took me a couple of times to get through it. But I was telling, unfortunately, but I was telling
this movie is like an hour and 40 minutes.
I know it's not that long. It was just a busy week, you know. It was just one of those.
Both of you are like, I love watching murder docuseries that go on for 12 episodes.
Well, yeah,
like, this 1.5 hour.
But this one was also done. But see, so this one just made me crave Dateline because it was made in a way that the way Dateline is sort of set up, where they had actors playing these roles, so it felt confusing to me if I was watching a documentary or if I was watching a scripted. I don't know. And then I was like, I could just watch an episode of Dateline. What's happening here?
Yes. To clarify we should just clarify that if you haven't watched this documentary yet, what they do is they take the actual conversations from phone calls and wiretaps and present it in a acted out way with actual actors you may have seen before, such as Matthew Modine.
Yeah.
I think Matthew Modine is the only recognizable actor in it. I mean, also, so one of the things that Operation Varsity Blues does is it kind of highlights the racial and class privileges that these parents have had getting their kids into school. These kids who have every opportunity to have studied for their exams and been on certain sports teams and chose not to, and instead take what Rick Singer called the side door. Yeah, it's just gross. And especially in today's climate, it's like, do I really want to take time to watch this?
It's just like you're watching privileged people be like exercise their right to be privileged. Like, heavily.
Yeah, I mean, they're already like have all of these advantages and they're like, you know what?
My kid's an idiot. How can he get into USC? Like,
right. But I think that's the fascination behind it, though, is the fact that like stuff like this is happening all the time in terms of rich, privileged people continuing to reap the benefits of being rich and privileged, whether they're benefits that we already know about, which is, you know, just making massive donations to these things or going to these ridiculous lengths to go to. I mean, some of these are like to get into schools that, like, I'm sorry, are not even that like.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like my kid's a moron. Like, how can he get into this school that it should be very easy for him to get into?
Right.
But yet I have to give $500,000 donation in order for him to be considered.
But again, knowing that they're going to get their comeuppance at the end is the best part.
Well, right. I did enjoy watching the journey of sort of, because to me during this entire thing, I had no idea what the actual process was, right, within this scam that had taken place. So that was interesting to me to see how Rick Singer actually called these parents, set up this very well-oiled machine where he had this whole network of parents feeding him money, and he was operating it like such a business, which is really gross, but also I'm not impressed, but I was just like, damn, like,
And I think that's a running theme through.
And the fact that none of these parents questioned shit, they were just wiring money, like massive amounts of money to him.
But not only did they not question it, some of them clearly knew it was very shady because they were like, I don't want to be associated with, I don't know about any of this. I just did my part. Well, you know what your part is.
Right.
Well, some of them questioned it. I mean, one of the women was like, my younger daughter's dumb and she's fine with it, but one of my daughters horrible. Is dumb and is like fine with it, and but the other one, you know, she's not like that. Like, she's smart. She's gonna figure this out.
She's smart. She's gonna figure this out. She's gonna say to me, she already thinks that I'm like up to no good, and I didn't want to have this conversation with her.
No. Yeah, I got it. I totally get it.
She is totally different than my older daughter.
What about the person who's literally taking the SATs for children?
Right.
Yeah. I thought they made a really good point about the guy who was like, everyone refers to him as a genius, but he's taking tests meant for 11th graders.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think I'm more confident in my ability as an 11th grader than I am now in my SAT skills.
Oh, I would fail an SAT.
You had a
right
train
now,
for
sure.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. With right. It's all like fresh in your brain at that point. Right now, I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other classics, or, you know, some of our favorite fraud documentaries or docuseries. I know that we all are aligned in loving the Fyre Festival.
Oh, man, that was such an event. Yeah. Two documentaries. Okay, amazing.
I was going to say, which are you more into? Are you more of a Netflix Fyre Festival person or Fyre Fraud?
I think I like the Hulu one just because that was not associated with the guys that were involved in the...
No, that's the Netflix one.
Oh, the Netflix
one? Yeah, the
Hulu
one
has interviews with him in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so whichever one that they were not involved in. I like the one where they were portrayed how they should be portrayed, in my opinion. Well,
the Netflix one, I think, even though they were released very close together, is the one that got
more
attention,
yeah,
specifically for Andy.
Oh, God.
And the lengths he had to go to, or almost would have gone to, in order to hydrate all of Fyre Festival.
Billy called and said, Andy, we need you to take one big thing for the team. And I said, oh my gosh, I've been taking something for the team every day. He said, well, you're our wonderful gay leader, and we need you to go down. Will you suck dick to fix this water problem?
Yeah, we definitely watched those back to back in my house. And I remember liking the Netflix one slightly more. And I also remember being in the Pop Sugar office while the Fyre Festival stuff was happening. And like those pictures coming out in real time of the styrofoam with the sad sandwiches.
Oh, yeah. Well, now it's also like, looking back on it, it's become this, anytime someone goes somewhere and they have like a crappy meal or some hotel room is garbage, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, it feels like Firefest over here. It's become now like a punchline of, but I think to me, the biggest thing with those documentaries was the amount of star power that Billy McFarlane was able to get these huge celebrities, Kendall mm-hmm. Jenner and Haley Rhodes, Bieber Baldwin.
Was Emily Ratajkowski, was she in it too?
Oh, yes. She named her daughter Sylvester. But yeah, she like, it's important.
Thank you for that footnote.
You're welcome. She was... she was in it. I think Gigi Hadid, maybe. There was like a bunch of people that they got. And also, right. of course, his like co-sponsor, which was wild, was Ja Rule. Ja oh my God.
Rule. No, I mean, he had actual musical acts lined up that were ready to go until they saw footage of the cheese sandwich. I mean, that's as 11th hour as it gets.
Oh, it was horrific. It was also really sad to watch all the people that on the island that they
right.
screwed over, you know, with these like massive amounts of labor that they had them do, and then basically, you know, nobody came to the festival. Or just like, we should note that Billy is still in jail, and Billy McFarland is still in jail and doing a podcast from
Billy
jail.
McFarland is only 28.
God, he's 28 years old.
Yes,
in my head he's 42.
I know, he's only 28. Yes, no, not only is he doing a podcast, but he has been receiving solitary confinement in jail for doing that podcast. I'm sure they're going to reboot Orange is the New Black and it'll be about Billy McFarlane.
Just Billy?
Like, he's going to be fine.
That is horrific to me.
Well, someone who I'm shocked that has not received a podcast yet is Elizabeth Holmes from the documentary that we saw as we were all enthralled with the entire experience of Theranos, whatever mm-hmm. it was. Half of that entire documentary was me figuring out what it even was that she was selling. Vials of blood. I was like so confused.
The documentary was called Bad Blood, right?
Oh. It was actually called Inventor Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. It was on HBO.
We both
just
got it wrong.
Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Sure does. For those who missed The Inventor on HBO, A, go back and watch it. But B, if you need kind of a primer, it revolves around Elizabeth Holmes, who's the CEO and founder of Theranos, which is no longer a thing. It was a health technology company, and her whole thing was that her team had invented this blood testing machine that could tell you all of these results with just one prick of a finger, which is, as we learned, kind of an impossibility with the amount of blood that people were able to give. But she conned either herself and thousands of people into believing that it would at some point actually work, and got millions and millions of dollars to be invested.
I think the dream was that she would have these machines in local pharmacies where anyone could just go in there and get blood work done super quickly versus having to go to the doctor. So the idea of it was something that people, you know, were excited about and would really have changed the face of, you know, a lot of processes, a lot of, you know, what's happening in medical offices and everything. The problem is that she was full of shit from day one. And the best part about, for me, the best part about that documentary is that her advisor at Stanford was like, the whole time was like, yeah, no, I knew this could never work. And then she just like used her feminine charms on like some old man
who which was also so gross, disturbing.
Well, I feel like when I think of like scammers and fraudsters, maybe they are 50-60 year old men who have like been around the block, but Elizabeth Holmes just didn't fit that mold for me and for a lot of people. She was in her
how dare you
30s.
I just told you Billy McFarland was 28 years old. He does not want to be in.
Well, I think that's the thing, is the example with all of these documentaries is that it's not just, I mean, with the exception of Ricksinger with the varsity or the college admission scandal, he very much fits the mold of a guy that would con a white, like white collar crime, whatever it is. But
okay, let's Elizabeth, just call it what it is. Privileged white men. They're the scammers. They're the fraudsters.
Yes.
Elizabeth Holmes is privileged, but she was a young white blonde lady in her early 30s. There aren't a lot of women in that industry, and not certainly not a lot of women who are allowed to be as successful as she was getting. I mean, she was on what, Forbes's list for the youngest and wealthiest self-made female billionaire in America. That's crazy.
Right next to Kylie Jenner.
Well,
well, maybe she should.
I have a lot more respect for Kylie Jenner. Yeah. I'll just say that.
Right. I mean, she did it with lipsticks and it seems a lot easier. That route seems easier. Right. And also requires less jail time. So I would probably opt for that.
Is Elizabeth Holmes in jail now?
No, so her trial, I believe, is delayed because she is pregnant. So it's going to begin on July 13th of this year, tentatively.
Something else that's crazy to me, though, about this fraud in the midst of all these other frauds is that the rest of them, there's a pretty clear, gain for oneself to be had in all of these, you know, with Billy McFarland and with the Operation Varsity Blues and with some of these others that we're going to talk about. It's like this person wants money and or notoriety, and like there's really not much more that they're trying to do here. With this scam, I mean, obviously we don't know what her actual like motives are, but the product she was trying to produce did promise to, if it worked, do something that would have benefited tons of people.
Well, yeah.
And
the idea behind
would have been
it
like a scientific
right.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say the idea behind it was very good. Like,
I think she had wishful thinking and she was maybe surrounded by people who told her it could at some point happen, and she convinced herself that it was gonna happen a lot sooner than
later.
Right.
I think she became consumed with being the celebrity and sort of lost sight of the actual goal. And also I think she hired a bunch of people that she just assumed we're going to handle it. And that, as we saw in that documentary, so many people that like worked for her made a note a couple of times within like those interviews and said it was a toxic place to work. She didn't want to hear no. She would shut down conversations when they would, you know, mention that, Hey, this isn't testing the way that it's supposed to, whatever was happening. She tended to shut down those conversations and was like, no, just make it happen. And I'm going to do an interview with Oprah.
I think that's where she and Billy McFarland are very similar. Is where it's sort of like all these people are like, hey, man or woman, this is not really going to work. And they're like, no, it will. It'll all work out. And that's, I mean, that's just like textbook.
Yeah, they all share the con gene. Yeah. They all have something in common.
It's like a mental
I'm pretty
illness.
Sure that's just narcissism is what that is.
It's magical thinking.
Yeah.
I was thinking about how Jennifer Lawrence is going to play Elizabeth Holmes in an upcoming movie about all this, in an Adam McKay movie. And I actually think she's going to do a great job.
Yeah, she's going to crush it.
She's a naturally low octave voice. I feel like she can really. Yeah, so that's what
her voice already is sort of there.
There's also going to be a Hulu series about this, I believe. I know Kate McKinnon was originally casted, but has since dropped out. But I believe the series is still going to move.
I'm really curious about the tone of that series. I feel like if they had Kate McKinnon in it, there's no way around the fact that it would just be kind of funny.
But I feel like that would have been a really good opportunity for us to see Kate in a completely different... I really do think Kate McKinnon is capable of any role. I think she's so talented, and it would have been nice to see her outside of a comedic role. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, I think her ability to do impressions of people, you know, is basically just practice for actual acting and playing that part.
Yes.
That's kind of another theme we're seeing with a lot of these, especially the scam stuff, is once it's out there, once the story's out there, either as an article or a documentary, all of a sudden, all the other adaptations spring up. So it's out there as an article, now it's a podcast, now it's become a scripted series, now it's a different documentary. Like, these things just never die. We're going to be seeing them in the pop culture landscape for the next, you know, few years as these
And there's someone out there conning someone, scamming someone as we speak.
Right now.
And next year this time we'll be talking about how there's a Hulu or Netflix series or coming out about them. It's never going to end.
I don't want it to.
Yeah, I don't either. No one's dying. They're just getting conned.
Okay, so two that I've gotten really into lately are both on HBO. One is The Lady in the Dale, which just premiered at the end of January. It's only 4 episodes, and it is the story of Elizabeth Carmichael, who popularized the three-wheeled vehicle, the Dale, in the 1970s during the American gas crisis. I don't even really want to tell you about her life story, because I think that it is much better to go in cold. I didn't really know what it was about, and I had it recommended to me by someone in Pop Sugar and started watching it and loved it. So I would recommend both of you watch that one. Another one on HBO that came out, I think, last year is McMillions. And that's the story of how one man defrauded McDonald's out of millions of dollars based on that. Do you remember the
Monopoly,
tickets that you would get?
Like, oh my God, yeah. The Monopoly on the fries.
Yeah, kind of the Monopoly tickets on fries back when they used to actually do the tickets and you didn't have to enter in some weird QR code or whatever to find out if you won.
I think you had to collect them. It was like playing Monopoly, wasn't it? You had to have both Boardwalk and Park Place. Maybe that.
Yeah,
maybe
it's one of those
it
where
evolved.
Like, there are a billion of Park Place, but there's only one Boardwalk, and the person who gets the Boardwalk wins. So
what happens if they go to jail? Nobody goes to jail.
I think that's someone did go to jail.
You go to jail. I mean, the police come and arrest you. That's how that goes. You call them and you say, hello, I've received go to jail. Can someone
like,
please
we're on
take
our way.
Me away?
Straight to
I,
jail.
Was just, one, I was just out here trying to get a Happy Meal, and now I have to go to jail.
I think that one does a great job at showing you sort of the collateral damage of the scammers, the people who have been taken for granted and maybe made a wrong choice along the way, but should not have been impacted as much as they were by this person's frauds. I think that's a really important element to some of these stories.
That's sort of how I feel about Gypsy Rose.
Ugh, Gypsy Rose. I feel like Gypsy Rose kicked off a whole other... All of a sudden... Munchausen by proxy became something that was in my everyday lexicon that everyone said.
But her mom was a scammer and she ended up being a murderer.
Yeah. If anyone doesn't know the story of Gypsy Rose, she was a little girl who was affected by all these different disabilities, supposedly. And her mother, Dee Dee, that's the name, right?
Yeah.
Dee Dee Blanchard. So Dee Dee Blanchard was afflicted, but what we would now call Munchausen by proxy, which is that she convinced herself that her daughter was so sick and needed her help and care all the time, and was in turn giving her all of these prescriptions and going to different doctors to get prescriptions that her daughter didn't actually need, thus keeping her wheelchair bound and very sickly for most of her childhood.
And they got a lot of money from a lot of these like Make-A-Wish type foundation places, basically
a lot of trips to Disneyland, stuff like that. So it was a way to keep herself in the spotlight and kind of that narcissism that we were talking about earlier of I'm very important and needed. Look at me, pay attention to me.
And for more on this story, you can find both a docuseries and a scripted series telling the story called The Act on Hulu.
Yes. So
choose your adventure.
Which I could not get through, but Becky, I know you really liked The Act.
I mean, saying I really liked it is a little...
You enjoyed it, The Act.
Who was the actress? She was nominated
I enjoyed
for...
The Act.
Joey King.
Ding.
It was Joey King.
She got a nomination, right?
For... Yeah, Joey King and Patricia Arquette, I thought, did a really good job in it. It was good performances.
Yeah, it's hard to be like, I really enjoyed this really dark thing that I watched, but yeah.
I mean, you know, Gypsy Rose has a very distinct voice, much like Elizabeth Holmes.
Yes.
In a very different register, I am not going to try to duplicate here.
I think I'm more excited about this new class of scams that are going to be turning into movies and documentaries. And we'll take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll dive into a little bit of those. Okay, so like I was saying, I'm more excited about the new documentaries that are going to be coming out, specifically the one about Anna Delvey. That entire story is just so enthralling to me and so fun. I mean, not fun.
Fake New York
kind
Paris
of fun.
And Anna
kind
Delvey.
Kind of fun. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It's all fun when it ends at Rikers Island.
Yeah, all that fun. Yeah. So much
tell
fun.
Tell us about Anna Delvey for those who may not know.
So Anna Delvey is an interesting case. She is a girl who basically transplanted herself into New York and became a part of the young New York social scene. She painted herself, no pun intended, as an art enthusiast. She knew a lot about art and was saying that she was going to open an art gallery, got invited to all these fancy parties. Everyone she knew thought she was also a rich heiress, much like them. But they were
just casually throw that in there. She painted herself as a socialist, but also everyone thought she was a rich heiress.
Like how? I would like to paint myself as a rich heiress. How do I go about this?
I don't know. She had certain skills. Like
Liam
Neeson.
She was a socialite.
Insert Liam Neeson. I have a certain.
You have to start by taking off your hoodie.
No, how dare you attack my NASA hoodie? The disrespect to our space station.
She was. I think fancy clothes was a big part of it.
So Anna Delvey kind of immersed herself in this group of young socialites, decided that she would become one, and eventually was found out for the fraud that she was. But there's something very interesting about the way that she sort of scammed and conned and frauded her way into this privileged group of people that I think, for one, am really excited to
see.
She was
like
if Eloise was a scammer. Like she's living
right.
in that hotel.
She's in the Plaza Hotel just scamming people.
Like she scammed her way to continue living. I think it wasn't the Crosby Hotel or like what used to be where the Crosby Hotel is.
And she was staying there under like her credit card that was continually declined. And she was always like, oh, it's going to be paid tomorrow. Don't worry about
it. Yeah. And they were just like okay, that's totally fine.
Right. In the meantime, like give me all the room service you have. Thanks.
Yes,
well, and that's another thing is that just
involved in the story.
I think that's why it's fun because all these people that are getting scammed and conned are just other rich, privileged people. So you're like, I don't really feel that bad for you.
Yeah. This one's kind of like the Bling Ring.
Yes. Oh my God. I love that movie.
Only she wasn't stealing. She was literally setting up all of these business meetings with banks and investors in, I think it was at the hotel she was staying at down in the restaurant cafe.
It's still stealing if you're staying in a hotel and not paying the hotel for your stay. That counts as stealing. She wasn't robbing people's houses, but.
Maggie, we have to go over what you consider a crime and what you don't.
I know. Yeah, Maggie's like,
I have a high bar for crime time.
Maggie's like, that's just like a medical crime. It's not a real crime. Like,
yeah, no, she wasn't robbing, directly robbing Paris Hilton's house, to your point. But yes,
I don't know what's legal in Portland, but
in
New York,
crimes.
If you.
Okay, but let's, what are they, Zareen, what are they making this into?
They're turning Anna Delvey's story into a Netflix television miniseries, which is going to be produced by Shonda Rhimes. So you know it's going to be
amazing.
Awesome. Called Inventing
Anna. So what you're telling
Anna.
Me is that Reggae John Page is going to play
Yeah,
Anna
I know.
Delvey.
Reggae John Page is going to be playing Anna Delvey.
He's going to do a great job.
He's going to do a great job.
I can see the Oscar in his future.
Honestly, his PR people, it could make it happen.
That's what I'm saying. Netflix
it.
And Shonda Rhimes, like, give me the cash cow, man.
No, I believe it. I believe it.
And then it's also getting turned into a play, right?
Yes. Emma Corrin, who we remember from The Crown, where she played Princess Diana, is now going to play Anna Delvey in a stage play inspired by the real life events of Anna Delvey's time as a con artist. Called
that is
Anna,
ideal casting.
Yeah. Called Anna X. And that is going to start its run in the UK, and we'll see if it makes its way to Broadway. Okay. Well, clearly I know what I'm going to be watching this weekend now that I've already seen Operation Varsity Blues. It sounds like The Lady in the Dale might be next on my scammer series hit list. Thank you, Maggie, for joining us and for providing your insight and expertise.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Okay, Becky, are you ready for this week's burning question?
It's not going to be about murder, is it?
No. I'm going to keep it light. I'm going to keep it fun.
Okay, then yes.
Okay, great. If you had to choose, you have to start with a brand new set of friends. And these are the only friends you can hang out for the rest of your life. Okay? Yeah. You can't substitute anybody. This is it. This is who you hang out with forever.
Okay.
Would you rather hang out?
This is like those things at the beginning of quarantine where it's like I have to pick my quarantine house.
Yes. This is your quarantine bubble.
Great.
Would you rather hang out with Ja Rule and Billy McFarland or Anna Delvey and her New York social circle?
How many people are in the social circle? I mean,
well, it's quarantine, so we'll only stick to like five of her friends at most.
Okay, I'm gonna pick Anna Delvey and her New York social circle because that includes more people. Some of those people might not be deranged, and I think the rest of her circle were people who had money, regardless of whether or not she did. So those people seem to have a better handle and better connections. Billy McFarland's in solitary confinement, so I don't really know how that works. And I have no
you and Jarl would be inside of his cell.
Well, now you've got me.
No, I'm just kidding. No, that's not.
I'm literally quarantined and confined. No. I think there's a clear answer here. Okay. So, DJ, play "Don't Be Suspicious" by John Ralphio and Mona Lisa Saperstein.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Have something to share? Email us at notoverit@popsugar.com.
Not Over It is a podcast from Pop Sugar and iHeartRadio. It is hosted by me, Becky Kirsch, and Zareen Siddiqui. Our producer is Emily Feld. Our editor is John Ross. Our executive producers are Lisa Sugar and Brett Kushner. Thanks for listening.